Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Hello and welcome to Start Your Week from the Bunker, where we set up the news stories of the next 7 days. I'm Justin Quirk. Joining me this morning to work out the week ahead is political commentator, Bunker regular, and the perceptive Jeeves to my bemused Bertram Worcester, Alex Andreu. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, Justin. Thank you for that introduction.
So we've got to start with what's still a developing story in the aftermath of the appalling attack on novelist Salman Rushdie while he was on stage on Friday at an event in New York State. What's the latest on his condition and the police investigation?
Tough one. The injuries have been described as life-changing, which usually means residual damage that results in significant impairment. From sources close to Rushdie, I think he's lost an eye, and the tendons in his left arm are severed, but he's expected to recover some of the mobility in his left arm. But he's stable, he's off the ventilator, and he's sort of whispering softly. He's aware of people around him and he's saying stuff. So I think the news are on the whole encouraging. There is footage of the attack. I haven't been able to bring myself to watch it. I met Salman about 13 years ago. I was doing a play at the National, Black Album, Hanif Qureshi's Black Album. And on a nightly basis for about a year, first for 6 months at the National and then on tour, I would burn his book on stage, or rather I burned a facsimile of Salman's book on stage. And we had a very interesting chat after the premiere. And I think the significant thing is that, you know, the play was a black comedy. So 12 years ago, this was something that was okay to joke about. And we've gone really back in time with that.
Taking a look at the bigger picture here in the context, the fatwa on Rushdie was obviously originally issued by the Ayatollah Khomeini of Iran in 1989. And while it was walked back to some degree by the Khatami government in the early noughties, it hadn't actually been lifted. What are the likely diplomatic repercussions going to be from this, do you think?
I mean, Iran is already under quite severe sanctions, and the West, on the whole, is trying to get them to rejoin the agreement to not advance their nuclear research. So, I mean, relations are at a low. I'm not sure what sort of repercussions directly diplomatically this will have. I suspect it will be more that pressure is put on allies of Iran to condemn the attack. Maybe it might refresh pressure to rescind the fatwa. There were some attempts, first of all, in the early 2000s, then in 2006. But by February 2006, the Iranian state reported that the fatwa will remain in place permanently. Salman used to joke that because this happened on the 14th of February, he would receive an annual letter from the Iranian state that sort of said the fatwa is still in place, and he considered it a Valentine's card. So it's also worth remembering that there is a financial incentive out there to attack Rushdie. There's a bounty, a $3 million bounty, by decree issued by an Islamic religious leader in Iran. And this was raised a further $500,000 by a sort of quasi-official Iranian religious foundation as recently as 2012. So the bounty is now $3.5 million, and it does come from semi-official Iranian organizations. So that might be something that the West targets. I mean, I know that money is not necessarily what motivates these fanatics, but it is significant that there is still a financial reward out there from quasi-official Iranian sources.
Yeah, the payment certainly hasn't put anyone off, I wouldn't imagine. No. Moving on to domestic matters, Labour leader Keir Starmer was interviewed Friday where he was defending Labour's response to the cost of living crisis. Labour are announcing new proposals to combat this today. What should we expect from them?
I mean, it's been widely trailed, so I think I can tell you exactly what's going to be in the speech. Labour are proposing freezing the price cap on energy bills where it currently stands, which is 1,971, if I remember correctly, and doing that until at least the end of the March next year. So to encompass the next two reviews, as it were, because there's one coming now, there's another in January, and then the next one is in April. So what they're saying is freeze it for these two coming reviews. I mean, it is expected to be up to 4,200 by the January review. So this is a significant intervention. You know, it's a halving of the average cap, more than that, actually, 4,200 to 1,971. So it's a big, bold move by Labour.
This feels like an issue on which the Tories are extremely vulnerable. I thought Truss's comment last week about saying profit not being a dirty word felt like a major misstep from her. Seemed particularly tin-eared about public mood while energy prices are on every front page this morning. Do we have any idea where Tory voters rather than the broader electorates are on this issue?
We have an idea where Tory voters are. There was a poll on the front page of the Times this morning that says three quarters of Tory voters are in broad support of the Starmer plan. Now, the problem is that's not Tory members. That's still not the selectorate that is selecting the next leader of the Tories. And here's the conundrum. So I would expect, if this were a tighter race, I would expect one of the candidates to move on this and move quite quickly, and then the other candidate to follow. The problem is it's not a tight race. So Sunak has, as the sort of underdog in the race at the moment, has more reason to shift his position to let's say, adopt Starmer's freezing of the cap, okay? The problem is Sunak's main platform is sort of fiscal responsibility, and this goes completely against it. And it would be seen as a quite desperate move, and it might not move the dial enough for him anyway. So why destroy his reputation instead of hang back and wait for the next leadership election? Truss, in the meantime, who is the more likely person to have made an announcement like that, because let's face it, she's a weather vane and she's made all sorts of announcements and all sorts of U-turns on all sorts of things. So she's the person you would expect something like this, but she's sitting pretty on a very big lead, so she has no incentive to. And so I think because of the way things stand now, there may not be movement in this unless there is some significant intervention at some point.
The leadership race rolls on this week, as we say, with three more hustings starting tomorrow night in Perth, then Manchester and Belfast. You were originally bullish on Sunak, then thought he'd blown it quite quickly.
Yeah, for about 2 days.
you were Team Rishi for 2 days there.
I just thought he needed to just let her talk. in the debates and reveal herself to be the idiot that she is. And what did he do? He talked over her pretty much for the first two debates continuously, which firstly didn't give people a chance to listen to the idiocy of Truss, and secondly made him thoroughly unlikable. It just reduced him, you know, to the 17-year-old office intern that has been there a week but thinks they can run the company better. And so, I mean, yeah, he blew it. He blew it spectacularly, and he blew it in the first debate, I think.
Welsh Secretary Robert Buckland publicly switched on Saturday afternoon from supporting Sunak to backing the Truss campaign. Are we expecting any more cabinet ministers to cross the floor?
Well, it depends how badly they want to keep their job, I guess. I think Buckland, if I'm not mistaken, it was one that had been out in the cold for a while because he had a sort of bust-up with Johnson. And he only very recently made it back into a ministerial job because of the sort of reshuffle that happened after pretty much everyone resigned. So I guess he really desperately wants to keep the job for a while. I mean, it doesn't look good, and he might lose the job anyway, but we'll see.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
This week, we're also still getting our collective heads around what may transpire to be one of the biggest stories of our political lifetime, the fallout from the FBI seizure of documents and papers held by former President Trump at his Mar-a-Lago home. This has already morphed into something like a Tom Clancy novel and is moving very, very fast. Alex, as of Monday morning, where are we with all this?
So the search warrant was released on Friday after people were demanding to see what it was precisely about, because Republican politicians were making out like it had been a fishing expedition and it had been politically motivated. And then the warrant was released. And of course, it turned out that it wasn't a fishing expedition. It was really quite specific and really quite serious. So there's basically problems with national defense, with mishandling of confidential material, with obstruction of justice. Adam Schiff, who is the top Democrat in the House Intelligence Committee, has asked for a formal, I think it's called a damage assessment. So he's basically asked the intelligence agencies to formally rate former President Trump as a security risk and release that information to Congress, which is quite a big thing. I mean, just imagine that, you know, that the legislature is asking the intelligence agencies to assess how much damage to national security the last president may have done. So it's big. The only other bit of concrete information that I know is that 11 of the 45 documents that were seized were classified as top secret or highly classified. So really stuff that shouldn't be in someone's, you know, in the basket next to the toilet in someone's guest bathroom. So, I mean, Trump claims to have declassified them all, although there's absolutely no evidence that he did that. Also, he claimed not to have them. Also, he claimed that he would have given them if asked. So that's what he and his proxies are saying. Take your pick. what excuse do you want that he had declassified these documents that he actually didn't have but would have handed over had he been asked?
We've already had one incident late last week of a Trump supporter attempting to get into an FBI facility before being shot dead in an armed standoff. How worried are authorities about more of this stuff coming down the pipe?
I mean, they're quite worried because part of Trump's support, I think, includes the very extreme elements of the far right, the militias, the quite radicalized people, the truthers, the, you know, the conspiracy theorists. So, I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, a lot of armed nutters. And I suspect we will see quite a few incidents like this. I mean, the suspect in the Cincinnati incident, Ricky Schiffer, the person who was shot, he was like one of the most prominent posters on Trump's Truth Social network and sort of posted on there that he was about to attack the FBI just before he went and did it. So, I mean, it's interesting that we're discussing the Salman Rushdie situation, and at the same time we're discussing people attacking the FBI offices because they believe, you know, Trump is being politically persecuted, because there are clear parallels, aren't they? I think the people doing that sort of thing on Trump's side do it precisely because they expect they will become the heroes of their community, in exactly the same reason that religious fanatics believe they will get some sort of credit in heaven for doing this thing. And so it's very difficult to predict. It's very difficult to prevent because you're not dealing with logic. You're dealing with religious fervor or the equivalent of religious fervor. These are Trump zealots. They're not people that you can, you know, have a discussion with and convince otherwise. And so I think a lot of it will depend on how good the intelligence agencies' networks are in basically penetrating far-right organizations, how good is the intelligence they have from them in order to prevent things before they happen, how good is their monitoring of social media, their red flags. But some stuff will get through. So I am absolutely certain we will see more of this going forward.
Back in the UK, the weekend saw more strikes across the rail network, plus announcements from workers at the Post Office, BT and Openreach that industrial action would take place for the end of the summer. There's also action coming from Royal Mail workers and also an ongoing walkout from barristers, which continues today. These aren't groups who we typically associate with industrial militancy. So why is this all happening now?
I mean, my suspicion is that nurses and teachers are about to follow suit. So this is happening now really because of a conflation of three reasons. First of all, a decade of austerity robbed these organizations of any fat they might have had. Any cuts they could have made have been made. Overtime that could have been worked is being worked. And so there's been a long, long period of demanding more and more of that workforce for less and less money because there's been a public pay freeze for ages. Along comes Brexit and chokes the labor market, which means that staff shortages become even worse. Staff is asked to work even more days, even longer hours, even more overtime to cover those shifts. Front line services are cut across the board because the staff is just in. I mean, look at what's happening with Avanti trains at the moment. And so that's the second factor. The third factor is the cost of living crisis. And so that comes along and makes life so much more incredibly expensive for all those workers. So they've gone through a prolonged period of having their pay effectively frozen and being asked to take more and more work and more responsibility followed by more labor force contraction. That means they were asked to take even more responsibility, followed by, you know, a government that applauds them on the doorstep, but then offers them derisory pay rises, which are actually pay cuts, considering the rate of inflation. And you've got this situation where everyone is basically saying, no, that just won't do. I can't afford, you know, if you're working all hours God sends, and, you know, in a profession that is considered, that was, we saw was considered during the pandemic as an essential worker, and government comes out to applaud you on the doorstep, but then they refuse to give you a pay rise that means you can pay your bills, you know, you're setting yourself up for a confrontation.
I mean, right now, the government seem to be working on the assumption that they can blame this on mythical left-wing agitators or indeed the Labour Party for some reason and minimise public support. Is that working? And you mentioned the potential for nurses going on strike. Do you think that's the one that they're the most fearful about?
Yes. I mean, it becomes increasingly untenable, doesn't it? They can pull that line out on rail workers by pretending these are rail drivers, you know, train drivers who are very well paid, which, by the way, is a situation that they themselves have created by making the franchises so short term and putting no training provisions on those franchises. There's basically absolutely zero incentive for train companies to train their own workforce, to recruit people, to advance them through the rank and to train them. So what do they do for the short-term profit? They pinch staff from each other. And this is what drives salaries up, because, again, there's a labor shortage. So might be tenable to do it with rail workers, even though Mick Lynch has been a media superstar and really put a kosh on that. But the more that expands to barristers, to postal workers, you know, to nurses, to teachers, the more untenable it becomes to say, oh, these are all radicals, because there comes a time when you end up with such a body of labor against you that, you know, it's the whole country, basically. Everyone knows someone that's a nurse, knows someone that's a teacher, has a relative that works for the post office. So you're not just talking by this point about millions of workers, you're talking about their family, their extended family, and their friends' network. And it becomes really difficult to say all these people are just communist loons and we're the ones that know what's what. Plus, the government keeps coming out and saying, we want a high-wage economy. They're still doing it. I mean, during this leadership campaign, every three sentences comes the phrase, we will create a high-wage economy. And yet, when it comes to the people that the government is responsible for paying, they go, no, 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 we don't mean you, nurses. We don't mean you, teachers. We don't mean you, social care workers. We don't mean you, rail workers. We mean someone else when we say we will create a high-wage economy.
And finally, the heat wave of the last few days is finally easing off across the country, with storms predicted in its place. However, an official drought has already been declared in eight regions across the country, with more likely to follow. The Environment Agency is warning this situation could persist into the autumn. Angela Rayner has accused the government of being asleep in the midday sun. What's the political dimension to all of this? And beyond the immediate short term, what else are we likely to see getting impacted by the drought in the weeks and months ahead?
You see, I think this ties to the energy crisis in a weird way, because what you're getting is another natural monopoly, effectively water, that is also suffering, you know, in private hands. And not just the shortages, but also the leaks and also the pumping of effluent into, you know, public waterways. So you have this situation where, you know, the rail is in meltdown, electricity and gas are far too expensive, while vertically integrated energy companies are posting huge profits. The water companies are basically letting areas, you know, they're allowing North London to be under 6 foot of water while considering a hosepipe ban and pumping shit into rivers. And it creates this situation where it becomes, I think, a lot more not only tenable, but urgent and rational to start saying, are these sorts of natural monopolies logical to have in private hands? And I think that's going to be a big, big, big issue in the election coming up.
And anything else we should be keeping an eye on this week, Alex?
So this week marks a year since the fall of Kabul. So I think we will see a lot of news and a lot of documentary material about what's been happening in Afghanistan ever since. And that's another big stain on the government that they won't want people to be reminded of. And I think the second story that will blow up this week, I've seen leaks and sort of moves to trail a little bit that A-level results might be very disappointing for students this year because, of course, for the last couple of years, they've been determined by teachers rather than by exams. And there's a shortage of clearance places in universities. So I think that will build into quite an important story by the end of the week.
And that is Start Your Week. Alex, thank you for getting up early.
You're very, very welcome.
Listeners, thank you for joining us. If you're enjoying the shows we produce, the best way to keep them coming is to follow us on Patreon, where your support can directly fund Start Your Week and our other shows, including Oh God, What Now? And Doomsday Watch. Just search Patreon Bunker Podcast for a few pounds a week. Gets you the shows early and without ads, along with other perks. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow for the panel show.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Start Your Week from The Bunker was written and presented by Justin Quirk with Alex Andreu. The producers were Jacob Archbold, Jelena Sofronievich, and Alex Rees, with assistant production from Kasia to Meischbeats. The lead producer was Jacob Jarvis, and the audio producer was me, Jade Bailey. Group editor Andrew Harrison, theme tune by Kenny Dickinson. The Bunker is a Podmasters production.
It's a busy world out there. Once you've woken up and got on top of all your WhatsApps, your texts, your emails and your DMs, then you've got another pile of stuff to get through. The news. Honestly, who's got the time? That's where Papercuts, the brand new podcast, comes in. Papercuts is your fast, funny tour of all the best bits of the papers, from the biggest scoops to the weirdest headlines to the definitely not made up showbiz gossip. And it's out every weekday with me, Miranda Sawyer, and a host of guests, including tip-top comedian Marcus Brigstock. Marcus, what's your favourite thing about Papercuts?
It's the puns. It's obviously the puns. I mean, when we go through the papers and you see what creative beauties the people who work, particularly in the tabloids, have come up with. often I think it's pun first, then story for them. They're like, I've got one. Find a story to match this. But it's a really fun part of the podcast to see what they've come up with every day.
Especially the Daily Star.
Oh, the Star. Proud to love animals.
So if you want to be on top of the news and have a laugh while you're doing it, get Paper Cuts every day on your favourite podcast app. We're out around lunchtime, Monday to Friday. Perfect for a bit of me time in the middle of a busy day. That's Paper Cuts. We read the papers so you don't have to.